Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com with your hosts, Maureen Hollering, Steve Frampton, Brenda McCoy, and Bobby Marcheso. During the second half of the show, call in to connect for a free psychic reading. Join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Stephen Frampton, and you're listening to the Psychic Viewpoint, sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. In just a moment, we'll be introducing our guest today, Evans Bowen, and we'll be talking with Evans about the secrets of ancient Egypt. It's going to be a very, very interesting discussion. But before we get started, I'd like to welcome my co-hosts. Maureen, how are you today?
I'm doing okay, Steve. Thank you for asking. And how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well. I'm excited that we're having a show about Egypt.
Yes, I am too. I'm very much looking forward to that. And I'm wearing the garb to prove it. If you don't, you can't see it, but I am wearing garb of Egypt.
You've got the outfit on, especially for this show.
I've got the outfit. Yes, I do. Just to be into it. Yes, I do.
You're wonderful, Maureen. Well, that's you're a good sport.
Yes, I am.
Well, would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about your work, Maureen?
I would like to do that. Yes, Steve. My name's Maureen Hollering, and I'm an accomplished psychic, intuitive consultant, empath. And I work with everybody at PsychicAccess.com. And my readings are really geared for, you know, I'm an empath, so I pick up a lot of stuff, but I also want to know, help people realize that every negative can be a positive. You can make choices, change your direction. When they come back to me and say, well, this happened and negative, I said, well, listen, I mentioned to you, you might want to go that other road or something. So I love my work, and it's difficult sometimes because I put my all into it, and it's okay though, but I love doing what I do. I must do what I do.
Absolutely. It's a calling.
Yes, a calling. All right.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, it's good to have you here as always, Maureen. Bobby, how are you today?
I'm doing wonderfully well, and I just want to say I must do what Maureen does.
Yes, we all must.
We all must. We got to do what we got to do.
She's our idol.
That's right. How are you, buddy?
I'm well, thank you, Bobby. Very well. How are you doing?
I'm doing also well. Just have been crazy busy, but
good.
Doing really. Yeah, it's really good. It was interesting spending 12-12 yesterday. I was with interestingly enough, I was with a lady who years and years and years ago, I had first said, I think I may be a little psychic. And she became kind of a mentor to me and has been with me since the day I even mentioned that. It was her place. I had my first gallery. And she was in town in California. She lives in Denver. And she was in town in California. We had lunch yesterday and just happened to be together at 12 at noon. 12. You know
what
I mean?
That's great.
And really weird and cool at the same time, you know, one of those kismet type thing. We didn't plan it. We planned to do lunch, but we were going to do lunch at 11:30, you know.
Yeah.
And just happened to be together at that moment. So that was kind of a cool little thing for me.
Well,
sorry.
It's great. I went to see my friend Misty, and we were sitting together talking, having a cup of coffee, and then we realized it was 12:12:12. And
yeah.
We looked at our cell phones, and it was 12 minutes past 12. So we were together at 12:12:12:12:12, which was really special.
I know. That's what happened. Yeah, it's awesome. So
great. Well, Bobby, can you tell our listeners about your work?
Yes. Psychic, medium, and teacher. I really enjoy teaching people how to get in touch with their own feelings, pointing out and guiding. Sometimes we overlook what's there, our own feelings, our own intuition. And there's nothing like pointing that out to people, how it's there and how to pay attention to it, and then to be there the moment that they do. And then it's really kind of exhilarating and a lot of fun for everybody. And so I enjoy doing that. And as you do, can be in touch with loved ones who have crossed over as well.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Bobby. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Brenda, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm really looking forward to this show because ancient Egypt is my milieu, I would have to say. And I'm dressed appropriately. I always wear my ankh. So it should be interesting. I can't wait.
Great. Well, I know this is a subject you're very passionate about, so it will be fun.
It is going to be a blast. And I work with all you lovely people at psychicaccess.com. And I'm a predictive psychic. I specialize in precise on-target predictions and, you know, dates, times, and places. And it's just something, well, just like Maureen said, it's something I must do as well. I can't get away from it.
It's a way of life, that's for sure.
It absolutely is. It's like breathing almost at this point.
Well, it's great to have you with us, Brenda.
Thank you.
Well, talking about a way of life, I'm excited that Evans Bowen is with us to share her insights and experiences of Egypt and the ancient sites. And it really is a way of life for her. You know, if ever you speak to Evans, you always hear about Egypt, her passion for ancient Egypt. She's fascinating. I know that she's been actively involved in the consciousness movements for 20 plus years, and she's worked with some wonderful teachers. She studied tarot, mediumship, and mastery with Rachel Sally, who is a wonderful lady and also a friend of mine. She studied Egyptian mythology, theosophy, channeling and sacred sites, Native American shamanism, Peruvian shamanism with Amari Lee, Egyptology and astrology with Mary Lamundo, who will be a guest for us also in the new year. And so in the last 10 years, Evans has hosted internationally recognized teachers, shamans, and intuitives at her home. And she also organizes group tours to sacred sites. Her website is theperpetualpilgrim.com. That's theperpetualpilgrim.com. And there's lots of wonderful information on there. So Evans, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Steve.
We're very excited to have you, Evans. You've got some big fans of Egypt on the show with us, so
we're
looking forward to talking.
It's my favorite subject, so.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Evans, can I start by asking you when and how you first became interested in ancient Egypt?
Well, it started about 10 years ago. I have a teacher named Paige Bryant who has a passion for Egypt. And if you go to her home, it's just full of Egypts and things. And she started to teach a class about ancient Egypt, particularly the mythology. So that's how I got interested in ancient Egypt was the mythology and the religion of it. And, Egypt was on the list of places to go, but, you know, it's a little intimidating. So I had put it off. So one day my older brother said, I think I'm going to send you to Egypt. Off I went on my first tour in 2009, and I stepped on that ground and fell in love. And mostly went through the temples and working with the mythology and the gods and goddesses. And then as I went back, I added the history and the architecture to my knowledge of the mythology.
Well, that's wonderful. Evans, and I know that you have a friend and colleague who is growing the blue lotus flower in Egypt.
Yes,
can you tell us about
friend. The
significance of that in the context of ancient Egypt?
Yes. If you go into the temples, the hieroglyphs, the blue lotus is everywhere. And in 2,000 years ago, when the Greeks and Christians took over the Egypt, they systematically got rid of the blue lotus because there's some aspect of the blue lotus that was essential to the religion of ancient Egypt. We're not quite sure exactly how they used it, what they used it for, but it was very important and you will see hieroglyphs of them smelling the blue lotus. And there's blue lotus reliefs everywhere. And so it came to a friend of mine to have some lotuses in a pond in a house she owned on the ancient site of Hatshepsut's temple. So these being a very high vibration that seemed to be holding something for this new age we're moving into this week.
Yes, and we must talk about that. I want to ask you questions mm-hmm. about that a little later on. So, Evans, I remember when we were talking that you were telling me about the pyramids, and we all think yeah. of the pyramids when we think of Egypt, but I know that you visited many of the temples as well. So can you tell us a little about your understanding of how and why the Egyptians, the ancient Egyptians, built the pyramids, but also share with us about the temples?
Sure. You know, our view, what we've been taught in school, what has been said over and over again, is that the ancient pyramids were tombs built by slaves 3,000-4,000 years ago. And we actually don't have any evidence of that. That's just the storyline we've been told, because that fits in with the current modern-day cosmology of history only being a few thousand years old. And but the truth is, we really don't know how they built the pyramids. The pyramids, we do not now today have the technology to build the pyramids. They are impossible for us to build. So could some people who had nothing but a plumb bob and some slaves build these things? It's quite impossible. But we've been told this over and over again, so people believe it. But there's been some new theories coming along. But I was actually looking some stuff up today, and these theories have been around since the 1920s, that the pyramids were not what we have been told. There's a couple of theories out. One is that they were actually some sort of a power plant. Christopher Dunn wrote a book called The Giza Power Plant. And because the pyramids are not exactly as they were then, we're missing the sides, we're missing the capstones, we don't fully know. The other theory of what they are used for is an initiation device. That after the initiates, the priests and priestesses, went through all their training in the temples for years and were finally ready, they would go into the Great Pyramid and lie in the sarcophagus that is still there for 3 days and three nights. And if they survived, whatever experience they had being in that intense environment, then they became the highest initiates. That's a very interesting theory to me, and one I subscribe to probably more than the others, although it could have been a power plant also. But the pyramids are aligned to true north. They're in the geometric center of the world, the land masses. Now, how did the ancient Egyptians possibly know that? And then there are four shafts going into the Great Pyramid, and they're all aligned to stars. But, of course, the theory that's come out more in the last 30 years is one that's been put forward by Robert Bavall and John Anthony West and Graham Hancock, that the pyramids, the three Great Pyramids of Giza, are aligned to the belt stars of Orion. And Orion was very, very important to the ancient Egyptians because their great god Osiris, they believe, is aligned with Orion. So there's these stellar alignments, there's these polar alignments that just say these people knew lots more than we have any idea they knew. So, you know, that just adds all sorts of questions. But when I've talked about Egypt and I started talking about the temples to friends, they were like, temples? We didn't know there were any temples in Egypt. All they could remember or think of was the three pyramids. But all up and down the Nile are the most amazing temple complexes. The only thing we can really associate them with today is the giant cathedrals of Europe. the scope of them and the size of them is just awe-inspiring. Even in their ruined form, they're amazing. The one probably people are most aware of is the great Temple of Karnak in Luxor, which was the biblical thief. And it's a temple after temple in an enormous multi-acre complex. And it's aligned to the Luxor Temple, which is the same dimensions as the human body. The Egyptians were very aware of the human form, and they used the human form in the mathematics to build their temples. There are quite a few other temple complexes in Luxor, Habu Temple, which has beautiful reliefs, and the great Hatshepsut Temple, the only temple of the only queen of Egypt, Hatshepsut. And that's actually quite near the Valley of the Kings, which is something else we are well aware of, which is the tombs, including the famous King's Tut tomb. Then often in Luxor, what you do is get on a boat, a cruise ship, that are kind of the size of our paddle wheel ships here in the United States. And there are temples all up and down the Nile. There's the Kamumbo, which is a dual temple to the god Set and the god Horus, and then Edfu, which is also to the god Horus, and Dendera, which is to Hathor, and then finally we get to the end, which is the Temple of Isis at Philae, which actually has been moved to this special island when they built the High Dam of Aswan. So everywhere you look, there's a ruin or a temple or something amazing to see, covered with hieroglyphs and obelisks, all of which would be very hard for us to reproduce today.
And do you feel, Evans, do you feel that the authorities, so for example, the government in Egypt and the governments in other countries, actually understand the purpose of these sites?
No, I don't believe that the governments of Egypt fully understand it, because their worldview is totally different from what the ancient worldview was. The guardians in the temples do understand. There are people, there are men that have worked in those temples 20, 30, 40 years, and they do know. And when you go to the temples, they can tell the people who are more than tourists, who are going there with a reverent heart, because they understand what these temples mean. And they assist you in, you know, I've had guardians block doors so that I can be in a room by myself, and assist us in all sorts of ways. I've even had a inspector general come and open a special room not normally open, because he knew that we were there to honor the temples. But the Egyptian government, of course, they are very proud of their heritage, but they don't. They, you know, they keep these things open and safe for the tourists because it's a very large part of their economy. And they are proud of their history, but in terms of seeing them, if you talk about the gods and goddesses of mythology to the local people, they don't really have any idea what you're talking about.
So. I've been watching the TV series Ancient Aliens, Evans.
Yeah.
And one of my co-hosts, Bobby, was asking about the aliens and, you know, your view on whether the aliens or whether aliens were involved in the construction of the pyramids. What do you think about that?
Well, aliens are not my subject, but I will say we don't know who built the pyramids. We really don't. Whether I make that leap that it was aliens or not, I probably wouldn't do that at this point, but these pyramids are far older than we have any idea of. There's a wonderful new type of science called archaeoastronomy. Now that we have computers we can see what the night sky looked like back 10,000 years, 12,000 years. And these pyramids are aligning to those night skies. So whether they were, say, left over from Atlantis, they were aliens, beings from another planet, or as we have, you know, right now with this turning of the age, just a
Evans.
Lot of talk about the, yes.
Evans, we're getting quite a bit of feedback on the audio, so the
okay.
producer's going to call you back again so that we change the line.
Sounds great.
Okay, we'll speak to you in a moment.
Okay, thanks.
There you go, Bobby. I asked you a question, but you could probably couldn't hear the answer. So
I know that's funny. The minute you ask her the question, she answers. So the government, I think,
it goes haywire. You're right.
Yes.
What have you done, Bobby? What have you done?
Bobby, it was you. You brought in an alien. You channeled an alien.
It must have been. I'm sorry.
I want to know her thoughts on the necropolis of Saqqara. So that.
No.
That was totally going to be my next question.
Yeah.
What was mine?
I think we all want.
Let's all just say it was our.
I want to know what her feelings are about it. If what she felt, the same kind of things that I felt when I was there.
Well, she's had some amazing experience, personal experiences. So let me ask. But so, Evans, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I'm fine. That is better.
Oh, great. It is much better. So, Evans, can we're all wanting to hear your response about aliens. So can you just tell us again, what's your view on whether aliens might have been involved in the construction of the pyramids?
I think there was some sort of there's a lot of discussion of the works of Zachariah Sitchin. He talks about beings from other solar planets, other star systems coming down and working with us. I'll let him be the expert on that. But we were definitely, what I was trying to talk about before we had our problems was there's this concept of the yugas that at one point we were in a golden age, you know, 10,000, 13,000 years ago. And then during that age, when there was more known, these pyramids could have been built by a much wiser people than us and who had technology that we don't have yet. And these yugas were considered at this point to be in the Iron Age, the Bronze Age, the age that doesn't remember much. And so what we need to do is look at these pyramids and the pyramid texts that are there as clues of what these ancients know so that we can try to start remembering now that we've hit this marker of 2012 and move back towards the golden age. That's a little bit more of how I see it. And we have the myth of the golden age. We have the myth of the Garden of Eden when things were perfect. So, you know, what I love about Egypt is it does hold these clues to a better age.
So do you think that we've lost a lot of knowledge then, Evans? That the Egyptians had knowledge that we just don't have now?
Yes, very much so. You know, what we base our Western society on is the Greeks. Well, the Greeks got their knowledge from the Egyptians, the ancient Egyptians. And through time, we lost that. I mean, at one point, just a few hundred years ago, we thought the world was flat. So, which the Greeks and the Egyptians knew so much more than that. So I definitely feel that we've lost a lot of knowledge. There are artifacts in Egypt that were laser cut. They didn't, you know, we don't know how that was done. You know, we are barely getting the technology now to reproduce even some of the most minor things they have. So that's my hope, is now that we're getting past 2012, that we will be able to start remembering these, that we will realize the wisdom these people had, and we will be able to start tapping into those energy streams.
And yesterday was obviously 12-12-12, Evans, and we're rapidly approaching the 21st of December. Can you tell us your understanding of the 21st of December's significance for us?
Yes. Well, it's an astronomical event. It's when we are aligned to the Great Rift of the Milky Way, completing a 26,000-year cycle of, and within that we have the precession of the equinoxes, where we actually, through the wobble of the Earth, have our pole star different places. And during ancient Egypt, the pole star was not Polaris as it was now; it was Thuban. And so, you know, is what I was talking about, the yugas, that we are trying to get back to the golden age. This is our reset button, so to speak, to start that march back around the Milky Way to hopefully the golden age again. It's going to take us a little while. We're just getting started. So it's a very significant time, and the ancient Egyptians understood these processions of the equinoxes very much so. You know, it's not just a Mayan thing. It's the Vedas in India talked about this. So these world ages are very important.
And do you feel that the pyramids play a role in that process now, Evans?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I consider them, and I think a lot of scholars do, ground zero. They are the center of our landmass. They are the largest structure, were the largest man-made structure till just like 150 years ago. And there is something in them that we don't understand. And when you go inside the Great Pyramid and you're in the King's Chamber, it's just this big square granite room with this sarcophagus in it. There are no hieroglyphs in there. And the Egypt that we know is full of hieroglyphs. It is a very odd, almost industrial-like room. And it has very interesting harmonics. It's aligned to these stars. And there's definitely a code to be cracked there.
And so, Evans, what do you feel changes on the 21st of December? Some people have talked about the end of the world and they're fearful. What do you think changes at that time?
I think it's just a marker in time. For me, I don't think it's the end of the world. I was brought up in a religion where it was going to be the end of the world every day for years and years and years. And so I've heard that one a few too many times. And so I just feel like that by being aligned with the center of the Milky Way, that there is a new level of light. It's like we're ready. We've taken this 26,000-year spiral. Now we're ready to take the next 26,000-year spiral. Well, it's an upward spiral. And with each spiral, we get to go to the next level. And I think with this marker in time that we are going to have access to more light, that we're going to have access to energies that haven't been accessed in a long time. And, you know, we're seeing much more interest in these sacred spots like Egypt and Stonehenge and the great mysteries of Peru. You know, Peru is just as awe-inspiring. That we can't reproduce what's in Peru now. And the show Ancient Aliens has been wonderful. And whether you agree with their theories or not, it's been wonderful to point out to the world, we don't know what these people knew. We cannot reproduce this stuff. We have no technology for this. And that the fact that they're all quite similar. So there was some sort of a high civilization or some sort of a knowledge that we don't have now.
Evans, of all your trips to Egypt, mm-hmm. which experience stands out in your mind as the most metaphysical, the most spiritual?
Well, there was the very first trip I took. It was a very personal and powerful trip for me. I really fully didn't understand the temples, and I had not studied all those that much, but I had really studied the mythology. And my teacher, Paige Bryant, had told me a few months before I went, she goes, I want you to start tuning in to the energy of the great goddess, lion-headed goddess Sekhmet, on the full and new moons, and study about her and, you know, try to get in touch with that energy. So I did it, and every full and new moon, I would sit and meditate on the great goddess Sekhmet. And when she told me Sekhmet, I thought, oh, my goodness, must I have Sekhmet? She's mean. I want Hathor. She's a nice goddess. But I did what I was supposed to, and about a month before I went to Egypt, I thought, I wonder where I'm going to be on the full or new moon in Egypt. Well, I looked it up, and sure enough, I was going to be in Sekhmet's chapel in Karnak Temple in Luxor. And not only was I going to be in Sekhmet's chapel on the new moon, it was also a solar eclipse. So I quite knew something was afoot, that's for sure. So that morning, we honored the eclipse, and a friend showed me some pictures he had taken in Sekhmet's chapel just the day, just the year before. And there was quite a bit of anomalies in the picture, light streams, orbs. And I thought, well, that's very interesting. Well, when I got into Sekhmet's chapel, which is to the side of Karnak, very small, you have to know it's there. And I went into the chapel where her statue was sat for 3,500 years. And I got in there, and one of my friends was sobbing. I was just stunned. The energy in the room was just so intense. So I sat there as best I could, and a friend gave me some incense to hold. And the statue was so powerful that I could not even touch it. Most of the group left, but Mary, our guide, arranged with the guardian to kind of do a ceremony for us where he took the energy off of the statue and would place it on us, you know, with his hands. So we stood in line and did that. And that was a very powerful experience. Well, that night... And the rest of the time, it was just kind of, you just kind of stood there kind of trying to take in this energy because I had been, you know, working with the energy of the goddess Sekhmet for quite a few months. Well, we got back to our hotel that night and we looked at the pictures my friend took, and the pictures were stunning. It was a whole series of light streamers and orbs. But there was one particular picture, which I have on my blog in the gallery section, where it is very clear hands and arms of light coming down the side of the picture. One hand on the guardian, one hand on the statue of Sekhmet. And you can actually kind of see the body, the outline of this being. So... that was a very powerful experience, and then to come away with a picture that shows what was happening to us, that these energies are alive and interacting with us, was just a really stunning experience. And I've never seen a picture with phenomena in it quite like that one. Orbs were very common in Egypt. Everybody's pictures had orbs, and then we were kind of like, you know, get out of our picture, you're interfering with them. So this was definitely a different level. And the next year, on the very same day, January 26th, I just turned around to snap a picture of Dendera, the Temple of Hathor, and that's also in my gallery. There is something in that picture that is not an orb. It looks very much like some sort of a little light being or craft. And that was a very much a surprise to me. So, you know, the most thing I can say is that these energies, these beings are alive and working with us. So
well, we'll be sure to look at those pictures, Evan. So they're on your website, aren't they?
They're on my blog, the Perpetual Pilgrim under the gallery section.
Excellent. So well, we'll look at those. Evans, we're going to take a short commercial break, okay. And then we'll be back to continue the conversation.
A new era in psychic services has begun. PsychicAccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at psychicaccess.com?
Well, welcome back, Evans. I remember when we were talking, Evans, that you were actually in Egypt at the time of the revolution, so January last year. Can you tell us about that experience?
Yes. Well, I knew I needed to go back to Egypt. I felt called to go back, but I was having a hard time really justifying a third trip. But through some very intense synchronicities, once again with the goddess Sekhmet, I ended up adding the trip at the last minute. And so my friends and I went off and enjoyed going over in Egypt for about 10 days. And the day the revolution started, the day of the first protest, was January 25th, 2011. And protests were very common in Egypt. So nobody really kind of thought much of it, and we were just having a wonderful day in the temples of Abydos and Dendera. You know, out in the middle of nowhere, we had no idea what was going on. We got back to Cairo the next day, and there were still more protests, but, you know, nothing unusual. By Thursday, the third day, we knew something was really, really going wrong. We were seeing the pictures on the TV of the, you know, fire, burning buildings, burning cars, tanks, and we knew something serious was up. So the next day, which was the 28th of January, that was when the protests were taken to the next level. After prayers, there was plans for that. The army was putting themselves in place, and we were actually in a hotel in Giza, which is about 20 miles outside of Cairo, but still, you know, really a suburb of Cairo. And that night, my friend Mary, who had a front room in the hotel, could hear the long line of tanks driving up. She woke up to hear these tanks taking their place in front of the pyramids. And so there was only a street between my hotel and the pyramids, and there was dozens of tanks, armed guards out there in front. So we were not allowed out. We were actually supposed to be in Tahrir Square that day at the Cairo Museum, but needless to say, the tour company would not let us out of the hotel. So we sat there and enjoyed the pyramids, and not knowing how we were going to get out. We were supposed to go on to Alexandria, and it was even worse than Cairo. So we stayed there in the pyramids, and we would watch the tanks move around at night and close off the streets, and there was a strict curfew. We could smell the fires. We could hear the shooting. One day the army sent out some planes to show their force, and it was quite a sight. And it was really, needless to say, my family was very worried, and I could occasionally get out a text to them, and people in our group were very worried. But my friends and I realized very quickly what a privilege we were having. that we were there, you know, when the world was changing, when history was being made yet again, and we were the ones getting to sit by the pyramids to watch, you know, thousands of years of history. What have the pyramids seen before? And now they're getting to see it again, and I got to see it with them. I felt like I had really gotten the privilege of being there. So we had to stay in the hotel for about 5 days, but it was a nice hotel, and we were never in danger, and we just got to sit there in the pyramids. So we were sitting across from the pyramids in the energy of the pyramids for five uninterrupted days. And actually, when it was time for me to go to the airport to catch my regularly scheduled flight, by then the airports had calmed down, and it was hard for me to leave the pyramids because I felt like I had this amazing privilege to be there. And my friends and I had already had a plan to go to England for a few days, so we went actually straight from the pyramids to the center of Stonehenge, taking the energy of Egypt, and I took some water with lotus petals in to connect the energies of Egypt to England. And that was, you know, a very exciting thing to get to do. And I felt like that was a great privilege I had gotten.
That's wonderful. Well, Evans, I want to ask you a little about the mystery schools. Obviously, we're all interested in metaphysics and practicing metaphysics, or many of us are. So we're interested in tarot and astrology, numerology, etc.
Okay.
What's your view on the Egyptian process of initiation and the mystery schools?
Well, the mystery schools were part of the temples, the temple system. Each temple was dedicated to a different god or goddess. And young boys and girls would be sent to these temples to become initiates, to study and to learn. And some of the subjects that we are still so interested in today were the subjects of the mystery schools: numerology, astrology, astronomy, plant medicine, dreams. There were special, in the Temple of Philae, there were special rooms where people would go to have dreams and have their dreams interpreted. And we're still doing that today. There was amulet making, they would learn spells and the secret names, they would learn ritual. And through time and process of learning all these specific subjects, and we have a mystery about what the tarot is, but we know that it is rooted in ancient Egypt, the symbols of the tarot. They hold those mysteries. And through processes and study and hard work, the initiates from childhood would be raised in these temples studying and learning with their teachers. And then they would go through initiation rites. One of the ones that we do know a lot about was an initiation rite at Kamombo, where you had to swim with the crocodiles and survive. Not what I want to do right now, but it was a very intense time. You know, they had to be fully aware of where they were, what their energy was. It was could probably be more similar to what we think of as the shamans do now, being able to get through these initiations. And then, as I had told you earlier, the final great initiation would be to be in the pyramid for 3 days.
And my understanding, actually, Evans, is that if we take the major arcana and the lessons of the major arcana in tarot, the lessons that we have the opportunity to learn here in our experience on Earth, I read that the interior of the Great Temple was in effect a series of trials. So once a person gets to a certain level of initiation, they would enter the Great Pyramid and they would go through these tests or these trials to see if they were ready to be fully initiated. Is that correct?
Yes, yes, that is my understanding of it. Yes, and if they survived, then they were the great initiates. And, you know, ultimately what they wanted to do was, you know, go back to the stars and to be able to do that without dying. And that is the text, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, the text talks to, but if you can crack the code of that text, it's about learning how to leave your body and ascend. So these were all the things that they knew how to do. And as we talked earlier about the lotus, there was a part that the lotus played that we don't quite know about yet. It's just now, the last few years, that we have a first few lotuses growing in the Nile water. So it's exciting times to try to figure this out. There's a story, Napoleon was the first person to go back. He took troops back to Egypt in the late 1700s, and he reportedly spent the night in the Great Pyramid. And when they let him out the next day, apparently he was just as white as a sheet and would never speak about what he had seen or experienced in that Great Pyramid. But something went on that he would not talk about. So there's definitely a lot more of the story.
Absolutely. What can you share with us about Thoth, Evans? I've been reading the book by John Varlow Melchizedek, The Ancient Secrets of the Flower of Life, and there's a lot of information there about Thoth. And I also have studied tarot, as I know you have. Mm-hmm. What role do you believe Thoth played back then and continues to play now?
Well, Thoth was the great god. He was the god of magic and writing and architecture and sacred geometry. And he was, you know, really what we would call the architect of ancient Egypt. And that stream of knowledge, and I do like to think of it in some ways as a stream of knowledge, we like to put faces and names to these gods and goddesses. That's our own human side. But when you think about that stream of knowledge is still very accessible to us today. And it's taken many forms. Then the Greeks had Hermes, and, you know, and Hermes was part of alchemy. And then it was believed that the biblical figure Enoch was also one of the incarnations or versions of Thoth. And I think that he's very active today. There's been this great surge in remembering sacred geometry and how it plays in our lives. And of course, the ancient Egyptians were very well versed in sacred geometry. The great pyramids are all set up to sacred geometry, the golden mean and the phi ratio. And so, and the temples are too. And so when we are at these temples are like living geometric shapes that activate us in certain ways. And that's why they're so important to us. When we're standing in there, they activate certain centers of our bodies and certain memories. And all of it has to do with the setup of the sacred geometry. And I was fortunate enough to have gone into the Assyrion, which is an ancient temple, yet again another temple without any hieroglyphs that way predates the main temples, and was able to see the flower of life that is etched on there and looks like lasers. So this is just the seed of our knowledge and our DNA and the pattern that runs everything about our lives. And as we know more about it, the more we can tap into that source and become more aligned with that geometry. Because mathematics, which is Thoth, is really the language of the universe. So we, you know, and Thoth holds that energy.
And I remember you saying to me, Evans, that the other gods and goddesses are still available to us, that they are real energies that we can tune into now. So obviously many of us are interested in tuning into our guides and seeking insight from our guides. But do you feel that we can tune into these energy streams, these gods and goddesses of Egypt?
Oh, definitely. And I had no idea of that until I actually got to Egypt and really felt the presence of these energies. And as I've had numerous synchronicities, particularly with the goddess Sekhmet, she keeps showing up in the strangest ways in my life. A friend gave me a magazine she had had for 20 or 30 years and said, "Oh, here's an article on Egypt." Well, there was Sekhmet on the front. You know, I was 10 years old when this article came out, and a giant calendar with Sekhmet shows up. A friend just gave it to me, and I feel like these gods and goddesses are working with us, and they love us, and when we tune into them and understand what they bring to us, you know, the goddess Hathor, who is the cow-headed goddess, she is of music and beauty and love, and Isis is the great mother goddess, something akin to Mother Mary.
And isn't she the high priestess in the tarot deck as well?
Yes, very much so. And so these energies are still active with us. The Greeks also then took translations of those. And Carl Jung, in his psychological work, pointed out how these archetypes that are held by these gods and goddesses are very much active in our lives today, and we need their way of relating to the higher energies. And usually some people are more attracted to a particular god or goddess than others. I have a friend who feels very aligned to Horus, a hawk-headed god.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because Brenda sent me a message saying, "Well, can you ask Evans her view on Hathor and Horus?" So I was about to ask you that question.
Horus's temple of Edfu, and Edfu is the latest layer of many, many layers of temples. Yet again, going back to prehistory. And, you know, he is the golden child, and he had to go up against the evil Uncle Set and prove himself worthy of his station in the Netheru, in the gods. And his temple is still very much intact in a very powerful place. Each time I've been there, it was at night. And you stand next to these enormous statues of Horus, and, you know, you just kind of feel the presence of that. And I can remember standing in the courtyards and looking up in the stars, and just the energy of it all was palpable. And, you know, I just feel that these temples, when you're not just there as a tourist clicking photos, and you are there and say, you know, "What can you teach me? What can I learn?" That becomes available to us. And I know that each time I've gone back to Egypt, that energies have become more and more available. The first time I went, it was very much of this kind of a stunning experience. And I took it in, and it was all I could do to just kind of breathe. Sometimes the temples were so powerful. And each time it was like another layer of experience that makes me feel that, especially now when we get past this 2012, that we can tap into more and more and have those gods interact with us more and more.
And Evans, before we wrap up, I wanted to ask you, can you give us a quick summary of what we can learn from the Egyptians, what we can take away from ancient Egypt?
They knew. Well, first of all, their religion and their everyday life was totally intertwined. They did not separate it out. in any way, shape, or form. And I think this concept of every moment of our day being a magical experience, being things, the beauty that is in life, and is part of that. And they hold keys to remembering the golden ages, and that there is more wisdom that we need to learn, and that is the one of the best ways we can get back to that is to study these things and understand that they knew more than we do.
Well, it's been wonderful, Evans. I want to thank you so much for joining us and for sharing your experiences about Egypt. I was going to ask you for travel tips for people that want to visit Egypt, but we're not going to have time. But yeah. I presume that you'll be writing about that on your website at some stage.
Oh, at blog, very much so. And I hope to get back to Egypt myself here very soon.
Wonderful. Well, Evans, thank you for being with us. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show, and your what you've shared with us has been absolutely fascinating.
Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Well, thank you, Evans, and good luck. It was wonderful to have you with us. Now, I want to just remind everybody that if you would like to learn more about Evans and her knowledge of ancient Egypt, as well as her travels to Egypt and what she has to share with us, you can visit her website, the perpetualpilgrim.com. That's the perpetualpilgrim.com. You can also look at the Psychic Access Talk Radio website. There is a profile there for Evans Bowen, just as we have a profile for all of our guests. Now, before we move on to that section in the show when the co-hosts discuss the interview, I would like to take a few moments just to make some announcements. Please be sure to stay tuned for the second half of the show to get your free on-air reading with our gifted psychics. We'll announce the call-in number a little later on, so be sure to have your pen and paper ready. And if you were unable to catch our show last week, you'll find a recorded archive link, as well as all archives for previous shows, on psychicaccesstalkradio.com. Just click on the Archives tab and select the show that you're interested in. And please feel free to circulate the archive links and future show details to your friends and family. Our objective is to connect with as many people as possible, so please go ahead and share those links. And do visit our website, psychicbloggers.com, where you can learn about everything from reincarnation, the paranormal, psychic development. There's really a huge amount of information there, and that's all offered free of charge by Psychic Access and the psychics that work on Psychic Access. And if you're interested in getting a reading from the best professional psychics on the internet, go to psychicaccess.com, where you'll find that all of our psychics are verified and accuracy tested, each offering their unique gifts. Each psychic has a detailed profile where you can find out more about them and just choose the psychic that you feel can answer your questions and help you. They're wonderful, wonderful people. It's a great honor to be with Psychic Access and to work with Doug and the team here on the radio show. And we have very high expectations of our work, so please do continue to listen to the show and to join us at psychicaccess.com. All of the co-hosts on Psychic Access Talk Radio also work at Psychic Access, so if you'd like a personal reading from one of us, please do be sure to visit us. We'd love to hear from you. Couple of other things. If you do have your own website, you can earn 50 cents a minute on every reading that is referred from your website to psychicaccess.com. So if you would like more information about that offer, please visit psychicaccess.com/webmasters. And again, if you like our show, please tell your friends about it. Join us in the chat room. Listen to the psychic viewpoint. There's somebody for everybody. So we really appreciate you being with us, and do help us to spread the word. Now, the call-in number for a little later on, when we'll be doing live readings, is 724-444-4851. That's 724-444-4851. So now for that part of the show when we talk about the interview, I know that Brenda's a big fan of ancient Egypt and has also written a book about ancient Egypt. Brenda, what did you think about the interview?
I thought it was really great. It's just like such a vast subject that it's like, how do you touch on everything? You know, I wanted to, since she didn't really get, I know she was wanting to say more about the Blue Lotus. So what I wanted to add for our audience is that, you know, and that's why I had brought up the whole thing about the oil magic and Edfu and Dendera, because the goddess Hathor and the, in Egyptian mythology, the goddess Hathor and the god Horus are married. They're husband and wife. And they're, each one of their temples, Dendera is the temple of the priestesses, and Edfu is where the priests are trained. And once a year, they were allowed to meet. It was called, you know, the marriage or the great meeting. And on in each temple, they have a whole wall of sacred oil recipes, because they were the inventors of aromatherapy, the ancient Egyptians. And so the Blue Lotus is all over those walls. And they, you know, it was made extinct because it was such a desired ingredient for the, you know, the sacred oils, because the oils were used for ritual and healing and just about anything type of healing. You know, they were ingested, they were made into unguents, you know, they were used for, you know, when they prepared the mummies and stuff. And the Blue Lotus is symbolic of creation, because it was the lotus flower that, where the young god was born. And the first, when they say, when Tehuti, I mean, when Ra gave his first cry, he was born out of the Blue Lotus, is my understanding, in Egyptian mythology.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you wrote a book about Egypt, didn't you, Brenda?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in my book is encompasses the history, the mythology, the, you know, the theology. And it also, it's a temple by temple journey into ancient Egypt. And what I do with my tours, when I bring my tours to Egypt, is I take the people, you know, to my students, we go to each temple and we reenact ancient rituals in each one of the temples, you know, according to which temple it is. Like if it's the temple of Isis, we'll do an Isian ritual. If it's the temple of Hathor, we'll do one for her. And it's pretty amazing. All these things that she, all these places she talked about, like the Osiron, that is a very ancient temple. It's Abydos is the, one of the oldest temples. It's a very beautiful temple, and you can tell it's old by the way the carvings are on the temples. If there's a bas relief carving, that's very old. That's first dynasty. You're going to see an awful lot of, you know, the temples done like Luxor and Karnak, where they've just carved into the temple. And those were resurfaced during Ramses II in the New Kingdom. So he was a massive temple builder, Ramses II. So, yeah, it's pretty, all the stuff she talked about was just, okay, go on and on and on.
It's amazing. I've got yes. to get into it. I've been starting to study ancient Egypt, particularly in my research on tarot and numerology and the mystery schools. But you guys collectively have opened up this great desire in me to visit the sites of Egypt. So I'm sure I will go.
If you're interested in it, you know, this is the thing. The pyramids themselves, in the words of Tehuti, as above, so below, everything is built on that premise at Giza. It's a reflection of what's on earth and in the heavens. And when you enter into the Grand Pyramid, you're going to see it's kind of like they have it set up inside, like if you would go inside a spine, an actual human spine, right as you go in. And each one of the pyramids, like the Grand Pyramid, has three chambers, and they represent the physical body, the emotional body, and the spiritual body. The other two pyramids are representative of that respectively. Like the Grand Pyramid is the spiritual self. The smaller, the middle pyramid is the one of the emotional, and the smaller one is the physical. So the initiate would enter through you know, the paws of the Sphinx and go underground. And then he would have to spend all those nights, he or she, in those pyramids and finally in the grand, in, you know, in the king's chamber, what they call the king's chamber. So
is it true that the entrance is in the paw of the Sphinx?
It is. It's not inside the paw. It's between the paw. And there's
can you see the entrance, though, Brenda? Can you see it? There?
No, you can't. It's underground. They have taken x-rays of it. It's underground. And they had all kinds of theories that there was an art gallery in there and blah, blah, blah. Maybe there was at some point. But what really happened, according to, you know, some of the mystery writings, is it would be like an initiation ceremony. You have to, you know, recite certain words and teachings in order to pass through the paws of the Sphinx. Once you did that, then you could go underground to the first pyramid, because the pyramids were not accessible from the outside. They were only accessible from underground. The only reason that they there's an entrance now into the Grand Pyramid. It was blasted into the side by, it was during this, you know, the time of the Arabs, in which they thought there was a treasure in there, and there wasn't. So they blasted through the side. But originally, there are no entrances from the outside. It's only underground.
Wow. Yeah. I've got to go. Hope maybe we get to go together someday.
We should. It'll be awesome.
I would love to. I would love that. I really would. Well, now, Maureen, have you been to Egypt?
Well, you guys are just best friends, aren't you, and Brent?
Well, we might take you with us. Not
well,
sure
you know,
about Bobby, but
I think I might be going. I think I'll meet you over there. I'll be over there before you, so you can kind
of come with us.
Okay. No, I.
We could do
I,
a live show from Egypt.
Wouldn't that be nice? And Brenda, think of the beautiful garb that we could be wearing over there.
I know the kids' belly dance costumes. Oh my gosh.
Oh, God! I would just that. You know, I just something I would just. In fact, speaking
do you think
of that,
that Brenda, both of you, should we take Bobby or not?
We would have to take Bobby.
We'd have to take Bobby. We can't leave Bobby behind.
It's okay. I'll just go to Ohio or something.
We can't.
Ohio.
Yeah, with Crosby, Stills, and Nash, you could sing this in Ohio. You know, speaking of women, which we weren't, I'm echoing, aren't I? You know, not to get away from the pyramids, I loved your guest. And fascinating. I love Brenda's, you know, she's very, of course, connected with Egypt and informative. Am I echoing? Can you hear the echo? Can you hear that echo? Oh, well, it's all right. Well, you can. Well, I guess we'll have to hear my voice. Well, listen, the thing I found out about, because I have not been there, I would love to. And so I will be going there before I'm 60, hopefully. But you know what I like about it is ancient Egyptian women have more rights and privileges than other women in the ancient world. And I, like, for example, they can own property. They can carry out business deals, initiate divorce.
Did I tell you I was a prostitute in Egypt?
Morning? You were.
Did I tell you that?
No,
I had past life regression. I had these really vivid memories of walking the streets, and I had beautiful long black hair, and I knew what I was doing, but and then I was killed. It's great.
That's interesting. Well, you know, women from wealthy families could also become doctors and priestesses, which is very unusual. But another thing, Brent and I were talking in the chat room with everybody about, we were before the show about wigs. You know, Brent and I wigs. Yeah, I'm echoing a lot. Maybe you should.
Fabulous wigs. You should see the wigs in the Egyptian Museum. Yeah. They're like so like elaborate.
Yes, do that, and I'll go on. And I'll go on. Okay, my back on.
Back on. Okay. We just reset to get the sound sorted out.
Yeah, to reset my being. But it's interesting because we were talking in the chat room, as people know, but and also before we started the show, we were talking about wigs. I don't know if you heard that, Steve, but I was looking around and doing some research. This is what I think is another cool thing. And I'm talking about women and children, about the whole thing I love about Egypt, because to stay cool, now this is my, and avoid lice, both men and women in ancient Egypt shaved their heads, and they would often wear wigs. And Brenda, you probably knew about this, mm-hmm. but But in fact, the wigs initiated social status and they became one of the most important fashion accessories. So, you know, that great, I used to have the Egyptian haircut, but rich people wore wigs made from human hair while the poor people would wear it from wool or vegetable fiber. But also ancient Egyptian women would wear wigs topped with a cone of greasy substance that was that would melt away and would give off the scent of myrrh. Myrrh. I love that.
Wow. I mean, it was different. It was different scents. I mean, you know, the Ethiopians still do that.
Yeah, it's true. You're right. And
they dress their hair with a like a fat.
Yeah.
But it's scented.
Yeah. I think I might try it. But also the children, you know, this is the thing. I didn't know about this, but I was doing some research. And like in Egypt, even girls, again, were considered a blessing. And the Greeks, who sometimes left unwanted infants, often girls, outdoors to die, were shocked to discover that the Egyptians did not do that. And this is coming from the history of it all, but so be it. And like, again, we go into the fabulousness of the clothes. The oldest dress in the world comes from Egypt, it is said. It is 5,000 years old. Now, I don't know what Mrs. Doubtfire says about that, but all I know is, come on, that was funny, you guys laugh. Thank you, Bobby, or was that? Also, you know.
That was Bobby mocking you again. He's so rude.
But no, it's not, because I will have my way with him later with that.
Yes. They have King Tut's underwear in the museum.
Are they?
It's like long underwear, but really, really, really fine. I mean,
that's lovely though. Actually, that's cool. I think, you know, that, well, things were not, well, also, you know, both, and eye makeup they were, you know, it was called coal, you know, this, Brenda,
coal,
right.
Coal.
Which was made from like ground up raw material mixed with oil. But they believe that it, not only that is what I like about it, they believe that it had a magical healing power that would restore poor eyesight and fight eye infections. And who's to say it wasn't so, you know? I didn't see anybody wearing glasses back in the history books. But I think that what they were geared for were a lot more advanced, especially with the women. And they thought of women. I like that, because during a time where still that goes on, they're not in, you know, some third world or not.
Well, still, you look at the Middle East. And
look at what's happening now.
Well, look at what happened. Horrible. To Steve.
Suppression.
You know, he was a past life and he was murdered. But that was also
murdered.
Egypt.
It was, yeah,
Egypt.
It was
so I guess that's not a good thing for me to say, because you were supposed to be the blessed soul.
I know, and I was very good at my job, Maureen.
Maybe you were really a man dressed as a woman, and they got... and a hoe. No, I'm joking.
Hoe.
I'm joking.
Well, here we go. Let's bring Bobby into the discussion. So,
yeah,
so Bobby, have you ever been a prostitute?
This is how you're bringing me into the conversation?
Well, I always bring you into it in an odd way. So,
of course.
You just assume, I know you're trying to avoid the question, but my question, just to repeat, was, have you ever been a prostitute?
Like, what do you mean? Like this year? Or
this lifetime. Let's start this lifetime.
Gigolo. No.
he was your partner in Egypt in a past life, Steve, okay?
I can only dare to Maureen.
Okay.
I could only hope that would ever be true.
Well, Bobby, have you been to Egypt?
I've not. And you know, we've talked about it.
To Ohio.
What's that? Yeah, I've been to Ohio.
Did you like it?
I've been to the pyramid of Chevys in Ohio. They have each of those things lined up against one another. And I tell you, they're probably about 3 or 4 cars high. So it's not a small feat. You ever tried doing that with one of them with one of them caterpillars? And I tell you what.
I tell you what.
That's fantastic.
Would you like to go to Egypt, Bobby? Is it on the list?
I would love to go to Egypt. That it's one of those places that so resonate with me that I do feel there was a past life there at some point in whatever capacity, because there's such a fascination, almost a longing to be there when I see the pyramids. So, yeah.
Well, maybe we'll all go together someday.
I just think it would be fascinating. Can you imagine all of us not being facetious, but you know, all of us by a pyramid sitting in a circle and holding hands and just resonating with that energy. Wouldn't that just be incredible to feel?
It would. Can you imagine doing a live show from the pyramids? That would be good. Oh,
man, that would be great.
Let's think really of doing would. That. Let's put our mind out there and we can make it happen, as you know. You know.
You'd think so. Is that possible?
Yes, I do, Chevy Pyramid Man.
I guess if you believe in them sort of things, I reckon we could do it. I mean, I'm game, you know.
We should do that as a project and see if we can pull it off, yes.
Well, they're in turmoil again in Egypt, aren't they, at the moment?
Oh, that's terrible. I mean, the revolution did absolutely nothing. Now they're trying to rebel against oppression again. It's horrible. Mm.
I know, a revolution that resulted in somebody taking too much control again.
It's very unfortunate.
I haven't watched the news yet about what's going on, but I will do after the show. So I try to send prayers to the Middle East every day, and particularly Syria at the moment. Well, I think we'll start to take some calls. We do have a caller from New York. Now, this call is for you, Bobby, so you can go ahead.
Awesome. Hello, New York. Are you there? Hello?
Hello?
Hi, how are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
I'm doing well.
So I have a question I've been struggling with. I'm trying to figure out where I sit professionally. I've been in, you know, a number of different kinds of jobs. I'm a student now. Want to be an ESL teacher, and I don't know, it just doesn't, at this point, doesn't feel right. And I'm trying to figure out at least, like, what skills I have so then I can match them up with jobs. And I know, like, people say, well, what skills do you think you have? But I've been thinking about this for 20 years. So I think at this point I'm basically just asking for other people's input.
Well, nobody's going to know it like you are. I mean, you know, I know, I think that you've called in and asked this question before, haven't you? Talk to us about what your gifts are and such.
Yeah, I have. I'm just struggling with this, and I don't know. I was hoping you can kind of read into my brain or something.
Well, it's not really how it works, and we've, like I say, you've called in before, and I think a couple of different of us have you know, led you to what maybe gifts that you have and what it is that you can do. Listen, the way that I work, I can't magically look inside of you and tell you what you're gifted to do. What I can tell you is, you know, some of the profound heart gifts that you have, which, you know, if you haven't ever been in a position to help someone cross over, in other words, if you haven't been at their bedside and have talked to them or held their hand while they're crossing over, I think you have a wonderful gift for nurturing and taking care of people. So I don't know if you've ever thought about doing anything like that, or if it's too much for you or you can't handle that. But in the helping profession, older folks, maybe you don't want to necessarily go then become a nurse, but there are places where you can go and even just volunteer before you decide to take it on full time as a job. I think, again, your capacity for an open heart and to nurture people is a very strong gift inside of you. It's much more so than me just telling you, oh, you have the gift of gab, you should go work in retail. You know what I mean? Like, that's not you. And as far as a particular skill set, you know, or if you draw or like to make things, I'm not picking up on that. So I think they're leading me more straight towards your heart and what
it is you're able to do for other people. I think you can calm them, you know, like you don't have a lot of words that you say, but you don't need a lot of words when you're helping to calm someone. Just being in their presence helps calm them. Do you see what I mean? And am I making?
Thanks. I'm sorry I'm being a pain about this. I just like when I get crazy about something, I just like keep asking the same question over and over again.
Listen,
sorry to bug you.
Honey, it's okay. Listen to what I'm. Hang on. 7 billion people on the planet do the same thing. We ask a question, and then until our brains compute it and our hearts hear it, we continue to ask the same thing of all over again. So that's totally fine. But do you understand what I'm saying? Do you feel inside what I'm talking about your open-heartedness and being able to nurture other people?
Not really sure if I feel it or I don't feel it.
So here's the thing. That's a case in point where you're asking, and again, this is I'm not getting down on you, okay? So I don't want you to think that. The thing is that so we ask a question, I tune into my guides, that's the answer, and you're still not in tune with it or still don't know. So if all of that's present, there might be something different that you would have to do in order to find the answer you're looking for. Because you tried to find it yourself. You call into us who are in touch with our guides and spirit guides or angels or depending on how each one of us work. The answer comes from there and you're not hearing it and picking up on it. So that's why the recommendation is always to make sure that you're very in touch with yourself so that when we see what we see, you can feel it as well and know when you're asking what direction should I go into, that's the direction they're pointing into. You see what I mean?
Yeah. I guess I gotta do some work myself, some more work. My problem is that I also have problems getting in touch with myself because my brain is just too busy to calm down, and I have a hard time. Like I've never actually meditated, so the only answers I can get is in sleep. And it doesn't always come. So,
that's okay. I think you just start where you're at. You know, you sometimes, let's make a more positive statement. Instead of talking about when you don't get the messages, let's talk about when you do. Sometimes you can tune into yourself. Sometimes you get answers when you're sleeping, right?
Well, when I'm sleeping, not when I don't tune into myself, just when I'm sleeping.
I understand. So that is what I would focus on, is getting more ideas of what it is that I just told you and seeing if you can't get some more ideas from that in your sleep. So make that intent as you lay down to go to sleep, okay? And unfortunately, we're going to have to move on, so I have to kind of leave you with that. But
okay, thank you very much.
Listen,
yeah,
just
that's helpful.
When you need to, and we'll kind of help you guide the way, okay?
Okay.
All right, sweetie.
Thank you, Bobby. Okay, Maureen, you have a caller from Mississippi.
Thank you, Mississippi, and Steve too. Hi, Mississippi. This is Maureen.
Hi.
Hi, and what's your name?
Rashanya.
Rashanya? I hope I said that right. Rashanya. Yes. Hi, and what can I help you with?
I have two interviews in Texas next Tuesday. And one I really, really, really want because it aligns with my career goals. It's in the education field. It's a career service representative. And I'm just wondering, do you see them hiring me?
Okay, so this is – okay, what I hear you saying is you have an interview next Tuesday for something that you very much want in the area of your career, and you're wanting to know how that's going to go. And is that correct? I think I got it.
Yeah, education industry.
Okay, great. And it is Tuesday, you said, this interview?
Yes, next Tuesday at 8:45
okay.
in the morning.
Oh, okay, thanks for the time. I'll be there. I'll help you. I like Mississippi anyway. Okay, let me see. I get a really good feeling about this. First of all, I feel that you have completed what needs you? There's a complete, you know, we're coming into the new year, you guys. It's really great because reading right now for people, it's like you come full circle. And for you, I'm getting like you've come full circle and completed the necessary, everything you needed to do in order for you to get to this point where you're going to have this interview, and it's well deserving because you're ready, you're qualified. And I feel where you're at right now, whatever you're doing, is just not good. It's not good energy. Whatever you're, what's going on around your workplace, it's like it's time to go. I do see a woman here. Okay. Well, I see a woman here that. Do you know if the interview? Do you know who's interviewing? Well, I see a woman who's very positive, very supportive, and I feel it might be a woman that will be talking to you on Tuesday. And I just feel a woman energy. And
Two women and two mediums.
Okay. Well, there's this one particular woman I feel is really down to earth. The timing is very good. I feel that there's another individual that's. You know, sometimes when job opportunity or, you know, you're being interviewed, there's another person that they're also interviewing for the position. Is this position only for one person or is there another, is it kind of come down to another person and you or several people? Because I do see a male here that looks like he also is interested or they'd be looking at, but I see you thriving through and getting and moving ahead with this. The timing is fantastic for this interview right now for you to be where you want to be. And I see that your personal power is really intact. The interview is going to go very well. And the one woman I'm seeing, she has lighter hair than the other one. I don't know if it's her natural color, but lighter hair. And she's very down to earth and you connect with her and she's very comfortable to talk to. And I do see you attaining this goal. And I do see you absolutely moving forward with this. And
do you see me starting with them?
Yeah, I absolutely do. And I do see it within the next, and I'm just going to throw it, I may be wrong about my time frame, but within the next 10-week period of time, you know, it doesn't mean 10 weeks you have to wait, but by the first of the year, by 2013, not too long after, yes, I do see you doing so. And, you know, don't be so hard on yourself. I can see that you get really hard on yourself. Your expectations are so high. You're very, you have a lot going for yourself and you can pull off anything. But one thing you may not be, you're a perfectionist, okay? But the thing of it is, don't be so hard on yourself and be yourself at this interview. I see you getting this. I really do. I see them wanting you very, very much so, and it'll just feel right and it's fair. And I see generosity around, and I see you celebrating with your friends or celebrating with like women friends or sisterly friends that you know. And it's very well deserving, and you've done you've done the work to be able to get to the point to where you're going to be interviewed. And I do see you getting it, absolutely. Okay. And I see you hearing about it before the first of the year, too. You will know. By the first of the year, you'll know that you have. Yes, you may not start till after, but yes, it's very good, and you deserve it, definitely.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for calling, and I send you well wishes. You don't need luck. You're going to do great.
Okay.
Bye bye.
Thank you, Maureen. That was great. Now, Brenda, you have a caller from New Jersey.
Hi, New Jersey.
Hi, this is Deborah.
Hi, Deborah. What can I do for you this evening? What you need?
Well, I'm calling because my father died unexpectedly a couple of weeks ago. And I'm okay with it. I think he's in a better place. But I'm just wondering about me for next year. Like, do you see what's going to be happening with me or what's going to be going on since that's done and ready to move on, just to kind of anticipate how things are going to be now.
Well, you know, the biggest thing that I see is, you know, when he was alive and towards the end of his life, you were very much, you know, I don't want to say you were in a holding pattern, but you kind of were, kind of waiting what was going to to see what was going to happen. And that was a cycle that you're in. I feel his energies around you encouraging you to take the next step towards change in your own personal life. And the change that I do see and the opportunity that I do see coming your way has to do with more prosperity and like attaining a personal, like a financial goal. There is going to be a little bit of extra money so that you can move towards that. And I feel that that happens. It comes your way by the month of March. I feel that it's fully, you know, accessible to you. I'm also seeing that you're going to leave something behind that hasn't been working for you and which has been kind of a dead end for you work-wise, and you're going to move on. And there is a man that you're going to help as well, and I feel that he is somebody close to you. He could be somebody that you're in a relationship with or that you care about a lot, and I do feel that he's going to play a part in this change as well. I see a lot of financial cards around you. I really do. So, you know, there's a little bit of a boost here, and from the other side, your dad is wanting just to kind of lift a burden from you, from all this, and kind of open a road so that you can, you know, make things a little bit easier for you in the next few months. It's a time of transformation in many ways, my dear.
Yeah, I do feel that in a way I do have a little more flexibility because I did worry about him so much. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of released now, so I'm trying to get unstuck, be optimistic, and just be ready to, you know, get on with it and do some of the things that I know I have not been doing and I have been putting on hold. I really have.
Yeah, it's a time of transformation, and what he's telling you from the other side, and I can really feel his energy around you, is that, you know, he wants you to just go for it, to take that step. You know, not be in your shell, because you had insulated yourself almost like you were, you know, in protection mode. And right outside of that is new prosperity, some exciting things in the area of work. I even see in the area of romance some things around you as well. It's never good to lose a loved one, but he's more comfortable on the other side right now. Passing is actually going to be followed by some enlightenment in your life. Were you there when he died?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, I was with him, you know.
That's what I meant, yes.
Yeah.
When I look into it, I see him, I see you, and then I see him standing next to you just from the other side. So he will be with you for the next few years while you make these, you know, steps in your life that you need to make.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much. That was very helpful. I appreciate it.
All right, hon. You take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Brenda.
That was lovely, Brenda.
Yeah, and Brenda, somebody in the chat room was asking about the title of your book. Can you hear me, Brenda?
The title is The Wings of Isis by Lady Brenda McCoy, and it's a temple-by-temple guide to Egyptian magical practices. So it's by O Books, John Hunt Publishing.
Excellent. Is that available on Amazon?
It is. It's available on all Amazon, yes.
Great. I'll have to order a copy as well.
Thank you.
Good stuff. Well, let's go. I want to ask you guys a little bit more about Egypt. So, Brenda, when you visited Egypt, which was your favorite site?
You know, it's really hard to really put your finger on it, but because I follow my patron goddess is Isis, and she has chosen me from an early age, my favorite temple was the Temple of Philae. The Temple of Isis at Philae. That was the temple that they moved because of the Aswan Dam. And I have such vivid memories of the rituals that we did in the inner sanctum. And it's, you know, even though they moved it stone by stone, you know, it's those, even though the belief of the land is not what it was in the pharaonic times, the temples themselves have such incredibly, they resonate with such a vibration because of all the thousands of years of ritual and ceremony and magic that were done in them. And the Temple of Philae is like that. It's beautiful. And it's a conglomeration of different eras. You can see a lot of the, you know, you can, there's a temple that Cleopatra built there. There's a temple to Hathor, but the inner sanctum is a beautiful little chapel in which each wall is covered with scenes from the myth of creation, in which, you know, it tells about how Isis had lost her husband and he was chopped in all these pieces and thrown throughout Egypt. It's very symbolic, their myth of creation, and it's done in beautiful bas relief in this little chapel, and in the very center there's a small altar, and we, you know, that's my favorite. I would have to say it's my favorite.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. It gives me even more desire to go there.
You know what? I'm going to send you some pictures.
I would love you to.
Yeah.
That would be great. That would be great. Where else have you traveled, Brenda?
I've traveled all through Egypt, but I grew up in East Africa, so I've traveled in, you know, Kenya, Nairobi, and Ethiopia. And when I was a kid in Ethiopia is when I first saw my first Egyptian temple, because the Egyptians went into Ethiopia, and there's a few temples carved right out of stone, right out of the side of a mountain there. And I saw those, and I think that sparked a past-like memory in me. And so that to me was very, very personal. And I've been to Europe, I've been to Stonehenge, and it was very interesting what the guest was talking about, how she had gone straight from the pyramids to Stonehenge, because, you know, Stonehenge is kind of like the pyramids, I believe, of the British Isles. And there's a real connection, actually, with the beliefs of the Druids and the ancient Egyptians. There's just so many similarities in those spiritual beliefs, because they're both solar-based, not lunar-based belief systems. So it's pretty amazing. And if you know anything about Druidry, and, you know, their rituals are very similar to the rituals of, you know, the sun that they did with Ra. You know, so it's pretty amazing. I think that they may have had some travelers, and they've had some kind of records of travelers that did come from Egypt to Ireland. And one of the things that is pretty significant is the greyhound ended up in Ireland. And the greyhound's from Egypt, ancient Egypt. It's an Egyptian dog. It's a 6,000-year-old breed. They ended up in Ireland. So it's pretty amazing how all this stuff kind of evolves. You know?
It is. It really is. Mm-hmm. They revered cats as well, didn't they?
Well, yeah, cats. The goddess Bastet was a household goddess, and she talked about Sekhmet. Sekhmet was the lion goddess. Sekhmet and Bast were, excuse me, similar archetypes. Although Bastet, the cat goddess, was very much a nurturing household. Every household in Egypt had a temple to Bastet, had a little altar to Bastet. And when a couple was married, they would be presented with a statue of Bastet with kittens, so that they would have fertility. And it was cats were sacred, and if they would, you know, it was a crime, was punishable by death if you killed a cat in ancient Egypt. So, and they're all over the place. The cats are everywhere there.
Yeah, you know, in fact, that they would get out, if there was a fire in a home, they would get out the cats first before the people.
They would. That's, and there's a whole cat. There's a whole cat temple and cemetery. It's in ruins now, but I was fortunate enough to go there. It's called Tel Basta, and they've got all these sarcophagus where all the cat mummies were.
Mm-hmm.
So why did they revere the cats?
I have a theory. Well, go on, Brenda.
Well, the cats were the messengers from the underworld, and because they had psychic ability. Mm. They are also a symbol of procreation, too.
And you know what? My feelings are that it goes within the topic, but kind of not. But have you ever noticed the cats look down at us, but dogs look up at us? And there's in the Bible, for instance, there's no domesticated animal. There's talk of cats, but not dogs, because dogs always look up, like, as they're like. I love dogs, don't get me wrong, but they say cats were sent to us by aliens.
Well, it's very interesting. I don't know if that.
I know,
like, there's a lot of felines that have been evolved, but you know, the domestic cat, they haven't been able. You know how they, with dogs, they can miniaturize them and make them big. They haven't been able to do any of that kind of stuff with cats. I mean, there might be some hairless ones here and there, but they can't miniaturize them.
You're right.
They're very mysterious,
and they are psychically connected.
Very much are.
And they're almost like a butt. That's why they can look down more at us. You know, they look because they're highly intelligent. I
mean, they are very intelligent.
Yes, yes. I mean, I always thought that was a neat. I heard someone talking about that one time, and it made sense to me. So, I don't know. It has to do with Egypt too, but I know that they honor the. I remember I did a lot of research.
Well, there's a lot of sacred animals. The ibis bird was sacred. Mm-hmm. If you think about all the ones that they mummified. Mm-hmm. They mummified cats. They mummified the ibis bird, which was a symbol of Thoth or Tahuti.
Well, you know, they also, what I was, you know, I did some research. Also, I found it interesting. There were a little, lot that had, well, it's believed, you know, I'm going to say believed, which I don't use the word much, but that also the Egyptians were the first to sew wounds closed, you know, like a doctor, you know, and surgical needles. And they would make from a hollow, it would come from a hollow out bird bone. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that they were, it's like they were far in advance. So, you know, the thing of it is, they were also considered, they were the first to, consisting of 365 days divided into 12 months. And they also invented clocks.
Well, it's otherworldly. And it's just like our guests talked about. They can say all kinds of theories on how the pyramids and Luxor and Saqqara were built, but if you go there, you're like, there is no way. Like, there's the necropolis of Saqqara, and then next to it is the Serapeum, where the sacred bulls were buried in these sarcophagus. These sarcophagus are tons and tons of carved stone, and they had to be put in down these passageways by something. They tried to do it, to reenact it with like forklifts or whatever. They couldn't even budge them. So they had to. The theory was the sound levitation, and I think we talked about that one other time. You know,
that makes sense, and you know, it does, because I don't know, they were real enlightened, the thing that I think I don't believe, I just am open to it, that maybe there was visitors that came from elsewhere, not of this earth, that brought and presented things that maybe they rose to the occasion and, you know, opened their arms to. I don't know, but I'll soon find out when I'm there next year. <Just kidding.
laughs> Let's hope that they don't burn it down. I mean, it would be just so sad if something happened to those. You know, I believe that those monuments don't only belong to the Egyptian people. They belong to the world.
They belong to the world, is right. And the world will make sure, hopefully, we'll all come collectively together and such, and not, and help, you know, that's the way, you know, it should be. That's what this is all about. 2012.
Oh, it's so. Interesting stuff, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'll just announce the number actually again for anybody that wants to call in for a free reading. It's 724-444-4851. That's 724-444-4851. So do feel free to give us a call if you'd like a free reading online, and we'd be more than happy to hear from you. Bobby, are you still with us?
I am still with you.
You haven't drifted into a trance?
Actually, I have, but I can speak to you now. Go ahead.
You can. Okay.
What do you want to know?
Can you channel an Egyptian god for us right now?
I'd rather not. It'd blow my computer out. I don't want to.
I know. They're quite high frequency. Have you studied Egypt at all, Bobby? I haven't personally very much.
Yeah.
Only a little. What's your view?
Gosh, nothing. I haven't studied it at all. I mean, you're almost embarrassed with the type of knowledge that Brenda's got. You know, anything.
She's just
got
an encyclopedia on her desk.
Really? Yeah. So
she's Miss Thang. Miss Thang.
So definitely know nothing, you know, compared to that. Only some of these programs that, like on Discovery, of the ancient aliens, or, you know, the many different theories on how pyramids were built. And you just get your own idea of how it was done and such. And I'm sure that even more ideas, like Brenda said, once you get down there, it just hits you and you just like, well, there's just no doubt in my mind how this was done, you know? So I have my theories and stuff, but there's just absolutely nothing I know about pyramids other than, you know, too, that they're discovering, you know, and some of the other things that I'm interested in as far as UFOs and life elsewhere and such, that pyramids, that they're saying that they have found pyramids on the moon and also on Mars as well.
I've heard that. Yeah, I've heard that.
That is so fascinating. I love that.
There's all kinds of pictures. You just have to Google it. There's a guy named Richard C. Hoagland who I would love to have on the show, but he has all kinds of pictures that he has analyzed and data of, and again, these actual pictures that you can tell that there was pyramids and domes and cities built on the moon. And now he's looking at Curiosity on you know, the Curiosity rover on Mars, and analyzing those pictures as well, and again with pyramids. So it is a universal thing. I like the statement of, you know, if the pyramids aren't just for Egypt, it's for the world. That's a world unified, universal, even not just even the world. It's a universal thing, not just for, you know, that it is unfortunate that all the wars and, you know, the unrest comes over in what is supposed to be the holiest land, you know. But otherwise, again, nothing about Egyptology, especially any of the gods or anything. Gosh, that's just, it's all very fascinating, but I know nothing about all that.
You would have such a great, like, media, like if you did a gallery in the Grand Pyramid.
Oh my God.
The amplification, we've done past life regressions and stuff and readings and everything in there. And it's just so powerful. Just amazing.
Yeah. I'm like Steve, you know, just when we talk about it, I can just feel it inside, that passion really growing of just, oh my God, I so have to be there, you know.
Well, it'll be the psychic viewpoint tour to Egypt.
Yeah. It would be great. It would mm-hmm. be such a good trip.
And the shopping and the food.
And
delicious.
The shopping.
Is the shopping good in Egypt?
The shopping is amazing. Do you like to shop?
Oh yeah.
Oh my God. Then you and I would be in the bazaar all the time, because I am a brutal bargainer.
You guys are bizarre, okay? Just
bizarre.
We love our bizarreness.
I'd love to go to the incredible bazaar in Turkey.
I've heard about that too.
It's the biggest in the world. It goes on for miles, doesn't it?
I haven't been to the one in Turkey. I know that the Egyptian one, the Khan el Khalili, has two sections in it. There's the big bazaar, and then there's one across the street, which is Avenue of the Tent Makers, and that's where you get all your, like, there's these like 80-year-old men, and they sit all day and they make these beautiful like wall hangings. It's like applique work, almost like hand-done quilts of these beautiful Egyptian scenes. And you can, when you get there, you can order what you want, you come back, you can get it. It's pretty cool.
Incredible. Well, who's hosting the show next week?
Bobby, isn't it you?
Gosh,
Bobby.
Me.
Bobby.
Hello.
What have you got planned for us, Bobby?
Very excited. Somebody who, it was actually her and her husband that I think I first began my spiritual journey. They have put out just thousands of tapes and spiritual meditations. It is Tara Sutphin and her husband, you may have heard of Dick Sutphin.
Oh my God, you're going to have them on?
Well, I'm having Tara on.
Okay. Yeah,
I don't know what Dick is doing. You know, it would, and plus it's kind of difficult to coordinate the calls, isn't it, to have both on. But it was actually Dick's work, and then, you know, Tara kind of came up from that, and they still to this day, you know, go to Sedona, Arizona and teach how to be psychic classes and things. And she's known as the American Mystic. And she's their work has just been incredible. Like I say, it started me off on my journey when I was looking for something. I had purchased their cassettes, if that tells you how old that is, and went on from there. So it's amazing. She just lives in Malibu too, which is about 40 minutes away or so away from where I live.
Cool.
And so to be in touch with her, and we'll talk to her about what it's like to be an American mystic and her journey. And I'm sure she'll have some tips and guidance for all of us who are trying to get a little bit more in touch with our own.
This sounds like a great show.
It does.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Bobby. Well, that brings us to the end of another interesting show. I want to thank Doug for helping us keep things running smoothly behind the scenes and playing the role of our executive producer. And thank you to you, Maureen, Brenda, and Bobby as well for being here. And I'm looking forward to the show next week, Bobby. It sounds like a really interesting one. Everybody's interested in understanding how to develop their own psychic ability, so that should be a lot of fun. Well, I'll say goodbye and until next week, and over to you guys to say your goodbyes.
Bless your heart. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bless your goodbye heart.
Nice shopping. Nice party. Bye.
Bye.
Hello. My name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic access. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.